Hey guys, just wanted to share a message from our sponsor. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. Anchor gives you everything you need in one place for free, which you can use right from your phone or computer. The creation tool allows you to record and edit your podcast so it sounds great. They'll distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard everywhere. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many more. You can easily make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, everybody. Roxy, let's get it out of the way. Comfy sweater week two. It's all about the comfy, right?
I feel like you should have texted me, Sean, because I have comfy sweaters here, too.
Well, people, no offense, and people love your looks and outfits, but it's always about my jacket a little bit, right?
That does sound accurate. Yes, yes, that
I'm
is.
I'm not trying to be rude. I mean, it's we haven't said, oh, what jacket is Roxy wearing? What sweater is Roxy wearing?
That's a good point. My name is not on the show either, so it is valid. It is valid.
Well, we talk about my clothes a lot, and we have a very special guest here today, Roxy, who, speaking of comfort, has always made me comfortable on a set in any time I've worked with him, and as a friend, and his DP extraordinaire and director, Brandon Trost. He is with us today.
And the crowd goes wild.
And the crowd goes wild. And we are just kind of going to be talking about, we've had, you know, episodes about getting onto a set and things like that. But we want to talk about what does a DP do to understand it, how it affects us. Brandon's obviously his career and you know, his journey. He's run into, worked with, collaborated with, and directed lots of different actors. So, you know, it's kind of be two parts. It'll be the DP part, and then we'll talk about the directing part as he's done both. And then at the end, unless I get a thumbs down, am I allowed to talk about our latest project, Brandon, that we worked on together?
I think we can talk about it probably generally, maybe.
Yeah, in a general.
Right? Just because it's not out yet, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Since it's not out yet, of course. It's just going to be general questions about that, obviously, not about a lot. And as always, I have Miss Phenomenal, Roxy Stryer, as my co-host.
Happy to be here. It's nice to do from the comfort of my home, but I will say, Sean, I miss sitting in the same room with you.
I do. We have a fun time, right?
We do. It's different like this, but I will say that I'm so impressed, just as a quick AfterBuzz shout out, to the amount of shows they are doing right now and how they're like crushing it right now. And so I'm glad we're able to continue doing this show because if I was not doing this with you right now, I would be very alone and really upset.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you also have beautiful flowers next to you, and I think it shames my whole sweater thing, by the way. In fact, while we're in this quarantine, we should see what beautiful accoutrement does Roxy have next to her this week.
Well, I don't know how many things I'll be able to get. These flowers will be here until they die, and then I'll be left with a blank wall behind me. But I did bring some for set decoration. I do have some nerdy Funkos with me. So does that count?
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, there you go. There you go. So let's see. But before we get into the topic and talking to Brandon, we're going to do Sean's week. As always, and I think Sean's week has to be the coronavirus, you know, week two vibe. I don't know what that means to us, but as always, we'll just give it a try. 1, 2, 3.
Sean's week.
Wow, we were way off.
Why?
We weren't at the same time.
No, I thought we were amazing. It sounded good on my end. Oh.
It did sound cool, but we weren't at the same time.
I went for a scrub-a-dub-dub. What'd you do?
I think it was more just like a monotonal, like Paul said over the universe.
We missed Mr. Funtabulous.
Yeah,
it.
Mr.
That's
Funtabulous
why.
Is not here today. Mm-hmm. So that's our intro to Sean's week, Brandon. That's
very professionally done.
It's very professionally done. It's high grade, it's high as tech, you can see.
Very tech.
So action packed.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. A lot of different flavors. A lot of different flavors going through there. Basically, I've done, I started up on coaching again. I am getting hit up for people who want to do Skype coaching, which is nice. My sketch comedy class is obviously kind of done. Building my TikTok, having a lot of fun with that. I'm probably going to reach 20,000 followers by this evening, which will be nice. I tried
Dang,
something new.
That's amazing.
In a month. That's a month.
Go, Sean. Get it, Sean.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. And I told you, it's the first social media that I've really understood, liked, had fun with. I did a contest yesterday, which was so interesting. I acted out a weird character, and I said, what do you think this character's name should be? It's kind of like the ducky, the friend zone friend in a romantic comedy, but you couldn't. They had to make up a name. And the girl who won was named Steph Lynn, who she came up with the name Gibson, because music is always the friend of all creative women. And so she said Gibson, and that got the most votes. So very interesting. But they've never done like contests like that before. So I'm just
trying to
say,
I completely didn't understand what you just said at all about that. But
what do you mean? Like she said, well, she's a musician.
She said,
she's a musician. So okay. Gibson guitar, Gibson guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
no, I know.
Gibson guitar?
No, I do. I'm still new to the TikTok world. I understand.
No, this is just a contest that has nothing to do with anything about TikTok. Like, I just kind of made it up yesterday. So
you're very creative, Sean.
That's what I like to do on there. I mean, I'm sadder. I wish more of my funny ones were as popular, but everybody, of course, wants to hear stories from Twister and People Under the Stairs. And those ones are the ones that blow up. Like, they blow up huge. So okay. Huge. So,
that makes sense.
Makes sense. So
what would Roach do?
Yeah. Well, here's the weirdest one. Everyone's asking me about Twister. And when I posted one about Roach, and then everyone asked about Twister. So for me, I think, oh, that one's going to blow up, Twister, when I do the Twister one, because it's a much bigger movie. The Roach one is like past 100,000 views, and the Twister one's like 17,000 views. And I was like, why? And my daughter said, well, you're more memorable than People Under the Stairs. You know what I mean?
I think also right now, Twister pandemic season is like too close to home for people. So maybe.
But people love that movie. I mean, they're all begging
it's amazing.
For a story.
That's
they were
amazing.
Begging for a story from it. So that's why I thought it's very hard to figure out what's going to blow up and not. And then I sang a song about having a chicken avocado wrap from El Pollo Loco for 10 seconds. And that one's huge. So you never know. You just don't know. So that was kind of been my week. Had a little stomach issue yesterday. Got very nervous for a few hours. And then luckily it passed. So. You just, you know.
When it's the stomach, you know it's not corona though, Sean. So you're fine.
No. It's now a new thing. Now it's one of the new symptoms, as they can say it starts that way. So.
No way.
Yeah.
None of us are safe.
I know everything. And then your nerves like hit your stomach. So you never really know. So we are going to talk to Brandon, like I said, about all these things. And we're going to touch upon the latest project. It's going to be interesting. You're going to love it as a viewer. So I would think you'd want to help us out. Roxy. Okay. Can we just stop for a second? My non in studio
transitions are landing
so well.
Sean, you want to know what kills a transition? When you comment on how good you are at transitioning. It's just not smooth. Like you
so
don't.
Lame.
I was like, look at him. He's got it. He's smooth sailing. And then you were like, take this.
I ruined it.
But here's the deal. Truthfully told, right now, this is as fun for us always as it is for you guys because this is our social interaction for the week. So I love being here, and I'm so glad you guys are joining us. And it's a great way to get involved live in the chat. On our YouTube, also Apple Podcasts. We read all of the comments that you guys have, and we give a few shout outs during the show. This week, because we are on quarantine, I wanted to give a couple additional shout outs than we usually give, because I know that you guys, it's cool to have your comments read. And I was going back through some old videos. And on one of our videos where we talked about self-tapes, how to make your own self-tape, which we thought was a great episode, Sean, I wanted to read four different comments from here to give a bunch of people shout-outs. They're short and sweet, but thank you guys so much for joining us. Jobiak420 says, just discovering this, really insightful with tons of great tips. Really appreciate you. Thanks for saying that. Weston Ira says, this show is so underrated. Speaking of underrated, who is the most underrated person that you've worked with? Sean, rapid fire answer. Most underrated person you've worked with. Go.
Most underrated person, an actress named Hedy Barres, who's just the funniest woman in the world.
Wow, you had an answer for that. Ariana Rodriguez says, wow, so helpful. We'll use these tips. And Demetrius Smith said, great info. So thank you guys all to everybody who's watching. Nice. Keep commenting. Again, everywhere where podcasts are, but specifically Apple Podcasts, we read all of those comments and on YouTube. And if you write something, you will get a shout out. I'm also going to be in the live chat today. So just so you guys know, every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, that's when we go live. So if you ever want to join us live to ask questions, comments, etc., that's where we are. So make sure you come join the fun.
Yeah. Thank you. And now I want to, as we break down, as I always do when I have a guest, a lot of the time we are, you know, people, friends of mine and stuff like that. So they always like to know how we met. And so, Brandon, do you remember how we met? We met in the FP.
Yeah, no, I remember. I remember very well. The first time I met you, your nipples were exposed.
That's correct.
That was part of your costume. I know that. We had never met. You had worked with my brother Jason on, I think it was a Rob Hall movie, right?
Yeah, Rob Hall movie, Laid to Rest in Maryland.
Yeah. So you guys worked together on Laid to Rest, and I know that my brother had brought you up as someone who was just awesome and really cool to work with, and of course I knew you from, you know, Roach fame. Because as I always have, but you know, when we were casting this movie, the FP that my brother and I made that we directed together, we ended up casting you as this character, Stacy's dad, who we kind of played as like a transgendered trans, you know, character. Yeah. We dressed you up and in then, like skimpy little clothes.
The mislead is you hear him yelling through a trailer, so you're picturing the stereotypical like heavy guy with the wife beater and the
big, like white trash angry overprotected dad.
And then
the big reveal is that you're basically not wearing any clothes and you got makeup all over your face and you looked insane.
It was a great part, and we had a
that's how we met.
That was a great day, huh? That was a great day. We had so much fun, and we all became friendly after that. And so that's how we met, but take us, you know, your journey. I know your dad obviously was in the entertainment business doing special effects, but what made you choose out of, you know, all the things? Your sister obviously is a costumer and Jason's writer and director. Well, I mean, what made you want to be a DP?
My whole family is in the film industry, you know, and it's all that I've ever known. I've never even had a job my whole life, not in the film industry in one way, shape, or form. That goes way back to being a kid and just doing stuff in the summer. But I think because of that, it just I never imagined myself doing anything else. It's something I've always loved. It's something I've always liked. You know, my dad does special effects, and that's what I grew up doing with him as a kid. So did my brother and sister. And you know, through that, I think that I always thought I was going to do special effects. I loved it. I wanted to do it. My dad was kind of grooming me to start a company at some point. And he kind of turned me around. It was, to be honest, it was my dad who sort of pitched me on the idea in a way. I remember I was like 16 and, you know, he was like saying how special effects is great. And if it's something I want to do, that's awesome. But he said, look, you know, it's kind of a dying industry with the advent of, you know, computer generated effects, because he does mechanical, like physical effects, like on set stuff, like fire explosions, stuff like that, practical effects.
Yeah.
And you know, that work kind of shrinks up and it's just hard. It's just, I think he was trying to protect me from saying, look, if you love it, do it. But you know, you could also look into this other thing, which I think you might be interested in, which is cinematography. And I was like, gee, that sounds interesting, but you know, but why? And he's like, well, you kind of remind me of a lot of DPs I've worked with, the way that you talk about films, that you analyze movies.
Demeanor-wise?
I think demeanor wise, yeah, he said that he told me that I reminded him of DPs that he worked with like in the past.
That's
what it is.
And I think also just my like just general approach to film as well, because you know he liked. I think because we got to see inside how movies were made as kids, for me, it made me like movies even more. It wasn't like it took the magic away. It was like I wanted more of it. It's like seeing like all the, you know, all the magician's tricks in a way before you, to be exposed to that from the get-go. So I knew I always wanted to make movies. And
on that for a second, because we have so many people out there, all the fans out there who are artists who are trying to figure out which path to go down, what are the defining characteristics or mannerisms or demeanor of a DP? Like, how do you know if somebody fits the DP role?
You know, that's hard to say because there's so many different people and so many different attitudes and just persona types out there. To be honest, from most of the stories I hear from a lot of DPs, I'm surprised my dad would think I seem like a DP at all, because I feel like I'm relatively stress-free and pretty chill. And like, I don't know, I just kind of try to approach everything from a very just logical and easy way that kind of makes the day easy for everybody. That's not always the case for everybody, but that's the same way it is in kind of any industry, I think, when it comes down to it. I mean, there's a lot of big personalities and there's a lot of smaller ones. I don't know how else to really explain that. The only thing I can say is that I basically just heeded my dad's advice. I looked into it. It seemed interesting. I was like, yeah, I could have more creative control. That sounds fantastic. And then I just sort of dove in, went to film school, and it turned out that I had a knack for it. I had never done any photography at all before that. I just went into film school straight for it. And I kind of learned still photography after I was learning how to shoot in a way, which is kind of backwards. But I don't know. That was just the way that I did it. You know, I went to film school right out of high school. I knew it was what I wanted to do. I went into like a trade school style program at the LA Film School back when it first opened. And I just kind of, it was like a year long program. It was really intensive. It was what I knew I wanted to do. And I put a camera in my hands immediately. And I just kind of learned by doing.
So is that really your recommendation for people who think that's what they want? Do you think they should go to film school and try to learn by doing, or what path would you suggest?
I guess I would say, again, it's what worked for me. The thing is, like, so many people start this in such a different way. It's hard to say that one way is right versus another. I think that I knew what I wanted to do, and I just went straight for it. And for me, that worked really well. I went to a film school that gave me a camera immediately, and for me, that also worked really well. I couldn't really, you know, for film theory and, you know, history and all that is great, but it's like I kind of feel like all of that sort of doesn't matter until you actually do it yourself and actually get your hands dirty and make mistakes. I think that the first 4 years worth of stuff that I did, I think, you know, most stuff, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just guessing the whole time. I still feel that way to a certain degree. It's just that you have more experience. So you have learned from a lot more mistakes.
Well, but you do a great job guessing if that's what you're still doing, because
yeah, exactly.
You used to still do it every day, but you just you just guess better because you just made those mistakes, I think. But you know, I also just I went to film school, and then I was there for a year, and right after I graduated, I got a job in the equipment room at the school, and I worked in the equipment room for like 3 years. So I was checking out stuff to students while I was still taking breaks to shoot film theses. So I was like learning by just always getting in the middle of everything and making friends, making a network,
getting your hands dirty, the whole thing.
Yeah. And like just building that kind of core group of friends who are like-minded and want to make movies also. And just, you know, I shot a lot of really bad movies. Well, I started as shorts, and then eventually I started getting features, and all of that was just because I would never say no. I said yes to everything. I wasn't picky. It was like I knew if I knew something was not going to be good, I was like, yeah, this isn't going to be good. But, you know, there's this one little part of it that I might be able to learn something on. So I'm gonna do
right.
And I'm going to do it and not have an attitude about it. I'm going to still do the best that I can and try to do a good job. And ultimately you do that, people notice, and then people will call you for another job. And that's kind of like how it went forward for years. And then by the time I started finally getting decent sized features, a lot of those came from friends I had made in film school that had also rised, climbed the ladder in a way, like producers and stuff. So, you know, in a way I feel like it's just, don't be an asshole is another big thing. I think
we talk about that on this show.
I think that really has gotten a leg up all the time. Sorry, go ahead.
We talk about that on this show all the time. And I think you and I have discussed it as well. When I first started in this business, it was probably 60-40 talent versus attitude. And now I would say it's 70-30 attitude over talent, because it's just too hard. It's too busy. And, you know, I think that 30% is not to be dismissed, but if you're cool to work with and easy, I mean, it's just so many people I know have lost jobs, or I have thought of even just me working with students when people ask me, hey, tell me the students. It's not necessarily the most talented students. It's the one who have the best attitude and work hard. And, you know, so, I mean, and I've seen you work. So your big, what was the movie you did with Art Sue? That's the one that kind of broke you at the.
Oh yeah. It was my first studio film was Crank 2.
Crank 2. That's right. And then, yeah, you did it a lot after that. That's My Boy, Ghost Rider, a lot of Rob Zombie movies. Then you got in with Seth Rogen. This Is the End, Neighbors, Neighbors 2, The Interview. And then you got into the woman who did The Independent in San Francisco that went on to do the Melissa McCarthy movie. You won in Sundance, right?
I did, yeah. And even that movie, like, you know, just in terms of how networking works, it's like, you know, a big movie that started a lot of things for me that is kind of the reason why I got a lot of those movies was MacGruber. Was this SNL feature that I shot, MacGruber. So I
love that movie.
I love it too. And that movie really changed my career in a big way. You know, I had done like horror and action and all this, like, you know, different like genre stuff. And then I got MacGruber, which is the first like real comedy I got. But then we wanted to make it look like a real sort of like old school, like Michael Bay, Simpson, Bruckheimer movie. You know, like that was right. The joke, you know, was to make it like actually have that kind of a look.
And was that because of somebody you had gone to film school with as well?
No, that was a job that I got. So that job, interestingly enough, my dad was doing the effects for it. I think he had gotten the job before I did. He didn't get me in the door to do it though. It was the line producer, knew me from some horror movie I had shot a few years before, and she got me into the mix, and then I met Yorma, who directed it, and then we've been friends ever since. So it's interesting how it all connects together. But, you know, Yorma, I did that movie for him, and then a lot of the people in the comedy world like that got me the That's My Boy job, that got me the job ultimately in the door to meet Seth Rogen and those guys, because they liked the way MacGruber looked. And I think Yorma was pitching me with those guys at a party or something, and like I had a meeting for This Is the End, and I've been with those guys ever since. But then going back to Yorma, who I did MacGruber with, his wife, Mari Heller, is who directed Diary of a Teenage Girl, which is the film I went to Sundance for. And she also directed, you know, Can't Ever Forgive Me, you know, and you know, I would have been with her on the Mr. Rogers movie as well, but the movie I was directing happened at the same time, so that happens. But
does that happen often, where they're contradicting schedules, and so you have to pick which one you're going for, or you miss out on something you really want to do because you already signed up for something else?
There are absolutely, and you know, I would say that even gets into. Which is tricky, because a lot of people that I end up working with, if I work with for multiple films, you know, it's like we're working together because we like working together, but we also have become friends and we have like a sort of a friendly sort of working relationship. I mean, when I'm working with a director as a DP, oftentimes I feel like my best working relationships are those who I do make good friends with. And I feel like a lot of those stick around, you know, in a way that it just makes the job more rewarding in a way, because I feel like we're both willing to, you know, test each other in a way that's not negative, but like making each other better at what we do to sort of make the best thing possible, you know? Sorry, I just wandered away from what we were talking about.
Yeah. And the other thing is, so we know that a DP, like, explain to us if there's anything more that I'm missing. You set up the shot, you make sure the lighting is really, really clean. Like, you work with the director, they say this is what we need to capture, you set up the lighting, you before this you've set out a palette, like you said, in MacGruber the line was, we want it to look like a hardcore action thing. So since that overall umbrella, you set up every shot to fit that mold, right? To fit, to make it look like that and light it. And
yeah, I mean, ultimately I mean, ultimately, it's the DP's job to create what the director, how the director wants the story to be told, you know, how the director wants it to feel. So I feel like it's, you know, when it comes down to it, we're there to tell the story. And it's like, if what we're doing isn't serving the scene or the movie or telling the story in the right way, I feel like you're not like doing your job, you know?
Right.
I feel like that goes into just a philosophy of like, you know, you can, sure, as a DP, you can learn how to light things and make things look good and look slick, but it's like, if it looks cool, I think if something like looks cool and you're saying to yourself, wow, this looks cool, and you're not like just going, wow, this isn't an amazing moment, or I'm not paying attention to that part of the scene, I feel like you're not doing your job right. Mm. It's like,
Do you have a conflicting vision in terms of that, as the director does? Because how often are you trying to focus on exactly making the shot look the way you're envisioning for the overall scope, and the director has a different thought in mind?
Well, I think a lot of that comes into what work has gone into everything before you're even in that position, before you're even on set setting up that shot. You know, you've gone through weeks and weeks of prep to talk about how you want it to look, how you want it to feel, what color you want the walls painted in the set for whatever reason. You know, it's like, what's going to be dressed with. There's so much thought has gone into every little thing that by the time you get there, you all kind of have these sort of checks and balances for like the looks and all. Kind of like, let's say it's like the rule book of how you decided for this thing to look and feel. You know, I mean, for MacGruber, it was easy because, you know, I love all of those 80s action movies that Jorma also loves. So honestly, I didn't really have to like, I just knew what those shots would feel like. It's like long lenses, low to the ground, wet ground, you know, wet downs and steam, and just like keep the camera moving. All these just
what
like
is a basic wet down? Kind of like
wet down spraying water all over the water so it looks all shiny and glossy. It's just like
spraying it all over the road.
Stupid thing that
makes
no sense. Yeah, it's all over the road.
Yeah, inexplicable. Inexplicable steam and water.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like. Love that. But it was easy to be like, oh, we want this scene to feel like the opening scene from Rambo 3. I'd be like, okay, got it. He's in Thailand.
Yeah.
He's building a temple with monks. Okay, good. I know what that felt like. You know, it's like, it's just like, that was what we did then. But then we would do stuff that was weird. Like, I like to kind of take a couple of movies and sort of blend together sort of mix of that feeling and then kind of apply that as sort of a rule set. And that's where I'm going to go to in terms of like, where the lighting should be, what the camera should be, what kind of lenses we want. And then from that standpoint, if we get into a hiccup with like what the director's thinking, what we want, we'll just kind of check each other off and say, well, if we did this, it kind of fits our style. This, if we do that, doesn't really fit what we talked about. Let's just fall into what we know is going to be, you know, have a continuity with the rest of the movie versus trying to tell the story. It's so hard. There's so many different little bits and pieces and nuances.
Yeah, and I've seen you work.
It kind of comes together.
So tell us, from this is an actor show. What should an actor know about a DP, and why is it important for them to, you know, it's ultimately important to be friendly with everybody on the set or get to know as many people on the set, but why is it important, and what should an actor really need to know about a DP?
Well, again, I think it's probably different just depending on the personality of anybody that you're working with. But I think that, you know, as an actor working with a DP, you know, there's certain things that like come with just being, it depends on the level of experience of the shoot you're on as well, in terms of like how experienced the actors are and this and that. But if you're on like a professional shoot, you're going to expect actors to just kind of have, and this is purely from a photographic standpoint, like a little bit of a technical workflow going on in their process as well as everything else they have to do. That technical thing is like, you know, you've probably heard the phrase finding your light or hitting your mark or all these other things that are just like the technical thing where it's like, you know, again, personally, I don't harp on that terribly. It's like, I would prefer if you hit this mark because I know that's where it's going to look the best if it's lit. But honestly, if you're this way or that way, it's like, I'm going to let it go because from my perspective, you know, outside of the director putting this all together, the actors are the most important part of the movie. And you know, I think without creating that kind of comfort zone on the set, I feel like you're not going to allow everyone to do their best work. So, you know, I think that's something that I try to take into account too when I'm shooting. So it's like, and I'm sort of backwards answering it from my perspective, but like,
But I think both is great. Yours and
is it appropriate? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I try to keep, like, as often as I can, big movie lights out of the set and out of the way. Like, I don't like to kind of bog this immediate set down around actors if I can avoid it too, because it's like, without that sort of freedom of feeling like you're in a real space, I feel like it can kind of, like,
right.
There's a certain way that I think probably you as an actor could be setting up for a shot, and all of a sudden, like, all these things come in, and just outside of the frame is like so much stuff you can't even move, and it's like you don't know what's.
Yeah.
It's like you feel like you're in a weird little prison in a way. And I think that, like, getting that far away, it just helps things, and it can still look good. I mean, that's one thing.
What were you going to say, Rox?
Do you have much of a dialogue with the actors? Like, are you okay with them asking you specific questions? Like, does this look better? Or does this look better? Would you rather me angle this way? Or would you prefer them to just do their thing, and you don't really want to have much of a breaking of that wall because you want them to just stay in what they're doing?
I mean, I tend to not say anything unless I have to be honest. You know, I try to stay as removed and just out of the way. Like, you know, the last thing I think an actor needs is just a million different people talking to them right before they're about to do their scene. And it's like, if I can get out of the way of that, I'm going to do that.
Right.
If I have to dip in and say, like, hey, excuse me, if you shift this way, it'll be a little bit better. Okay, bye. It's like, it might be that sort of like a quick interaction, you know, but it's like,
right.
I kind of want the actor to do what they think is instinctive and feels natural, because I think that if you're giving too many of those technical notes, you can kind of start to get a little bit more of a, you know, kind of a right. Frankenstein performance, because everyone's thinking about too much. It's just
right. You want to keep them out of their head. You know, that's going to work best to keep them out of their
yeah.
head.
And it's like, we're all there to do the same thing, which is make a movie and make it as good as possible. So it's like, this is just stuff that I think I've accumulated from my experience. It's more just like how I approach it, which is just like trying to be removed, and I'll dip in whenever necessary to sort of make an adjustment. But I just try to stay out of the way.
Right.
I feel like that's honestly the best way for a lot of different departments in general. It's like, everyone's there to do their job, and everyone's hired because right. they're good at what they do in theory. So, you know, so long as we're all sort of working toward the same goal, which is this sort of overall picture that the director's kind of like explained to everybody at this point.
To everybody.
Do our thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have any do's and don'ts for actors? Like, what would you say, make sure you do? I mean, you mentioned a couple of things. Finding your light, guys. Sometimes we forget that we're talking to people and know nothing. That means, so if you're someday lit a certain thing and you stand behind an actor in a certain way, like me going back like this, my light gets a lot worse. It's stepping in a way, so the way they lit you so you can be seen better and hitting a mark. And we did talk about that on one show, is, you know, being at a specific place where the camera is and the lighting is.
Just to be clear, it's not that you guys know nothing. It's that you guys
are
a little greener in this field, perhaps. Some
right,
people
exactly.
watching. We have all different degrees of people
who
have been
all
at this for
degrees.
A varying amount of times. But also, you guys know nothing.
Yes. That's so
I
great.
Mean, I would say it's like trying to find, like finding the light, finding the lens, I would say is almost more, is actually more important than finding the light when it comes down to it. You know, it's so easy to kind of line up for a shot. And if you see the lens in front of you and like someone's kind of standing right here, like it's better if you're there, no matter where.
Yeah.
You know, like right. that's like, that's just something.
And that, if people who are listening, Brandon put his hand in front of his face so we couldn't see him at all. So it's basically you're blocking yourself from the camera. I just remember this. If we were told if you can't see the camera at all, then the camera probably can't see you at all. That's certain kind of shots, but in the most basic sense.
It probably, what I'm hearing from you is it probably makes your job easier and better and your work better when an actor is more tech savvy, so that they know those things, so that that's almost like second nature to them, to make sure they take 2 inches to their right when they see where you are based on where the actor in front of them is. It sounds like that just makes everybody's job a little bit easier and the picture better.
Yeah,
it does. And there's, you know, there's subtle things too. You know, it's like a lot of, I think, trained actors will look at the, will just choose one eye of the other person to look at and look at the eye that's closest to the lens and hold it there, because it's easy to kind of bounce back and forth between pupils too. Like, that's something that in a close-up can also start to be something that can be distracting. I don't know if you know if that's something that you do, Sean.
That's a Michael Caine thing. Michael Caine talks about that.
I think it makes a difference, but especially in a close-up. Speaking of close-ups, if like the frame is here at like the top of my eyebrows, the bottom of my chin, and like, I think it's a reason why it's good to know lenses. Like, big movements, like moving really fast in that is right. something that is really hard and can also ruin a close up. I think it's also trying to, and it just builds into your technical experience. It's like if you have a, if you build up kind of like a, you know, if you just learn lenses, you know, if you have a long lens or a close up lens, it's like you don't have to do as much, if that makes sense, motion wise. Even if it right. doesn't match what you were doing before, it's like slowing it down and making it more minimal will preserve the shot in a way, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
But so, these are all just technical, mechanical things.
When you say even if it doesn't match, so you think that that's less important because leave that to the editor to figure out what she would rather use and make it all look good together. You would just rather somebody play to the shot than think about matching it?
Well, I think matching is important, but it's, let's say someone is, I'm trying to think of a good example of how to play it, but it's like, if you're in a wide shot and you're doing like this, these big and kind of crazy movements with like your arms or something like that, for example, and you want to cut to a closer shot, you can go closer and just do slightly smaller movements. You're still moving around, but it's still going right. to cut, even though it doesn't technically match with what's exact from the wide shot to what's close, you know, that's something you can get away with. It's just like little cheats. You figure out.
Yeah. So just take the time to understand, take the time. And I've said this before, when you start getting on sets, take the time. Don't sit in your trailer, not meeting anybody. Go network. We talked about how important that is. Meet new people. I always say try to leave the set with at least 2 phone numbers, if you can, or emails. But also take the time to go look and learn what is going on with the DP department or the sound department or the art department or the costume department. Try to figure out everything. It makes it easier. Bradley Cooper spent just hours when he wasn't acting for years before he even attempted to direct A Star Is Born, just studying the different parts so he could understand more.
It may seem boring at times too, like nothing's going on, but there's always something happening. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
And I would say that's another thing that is also can be frustrating is like, you know, I've definitely dealt with actors who are also glued to like their cell phones, for example. It's like everyone's trying to work, and it's like you're trying to like have someone hit the mark or figure out where they're going to go. And it's like they're just
on set,
to something else.
Yeah, they have their phone with them. They're doing that on set.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people do it all the time.
During like a camera rehearsal? That's crazy.
I mean, I've seen people do that before, but it's like, But even just off, it's like, it's almost like, you know, I feel like it might be a little bit too, I can't tell if I think it's too much or not. How I know Tarantino just bans phones from sets completely and really just kind of keeps everybody there in it and in the moment. And I actually feel like, you know, I visited one of the sets once when they were shooting, I think they were shooting Django Unchained and we were doing This Is the End down in New Orleans.
Yeah.
No one's on their phone. It's just like there's, you know, DiCaprio is just like reading a newspaper in a director's chair and everyone's just like hanging out and like focused and watching what's going on. And I think there's so much distractions without paying attention to what's happening, but that also can kind of, I don't know, it's a valid point to not.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is when you are lucky enough to be on a set, soak it all in.
Yeah.
Soak it all in. I mean, I remember I came down to visit you then on that, This Is the End, because I was shooting Hatchet 3 with our friend BJ McDonald. And I came and visited you, and it was just so, so cool to see you work. And I just remember like kind of shadowing you and seeing how you did everything and how you set up these crazy shots. And, you know, it was really amazing. But it, again, you have to soak it. You have to kind of soak it all in and try to learn. And you know, I was guilty of that for a while. Just like, ooh, this is great. I'm going to bring my pillow. I'm going to read a book. I'm going to listen to some podcast. And then I just realized, wow, it's so useless to sit in my dressing. There's so many, I'm missing opportunity after opportunity to learn stuff, you know? So yeah, it's definitely something I want to learn more of, and we all should learn more of. That's a really good do and don't. We are getting lower on the time, but I think for Roxy, you would agree. I think we have to have Brandon back as a director because we're talking a lot about DP.
Yeah, 100%, because a lot of people do exactly that. They make the jump or do both things simultaneously, DP and then become director, or I would love to hear more stories about that. So yes, we're not letting you off the hook. We need a episode two.
Well, so we also...
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we also, what I think is, instead of going into that story of the one we were talking about, our recent project, we'll save that for directing, but here's how things work, guys. So I did this movie, Laid to Rest. I met Brandon, I'm sorry, I met Jason and his sister, Sarah, came back. We did this movie, The FP. Very fun. I've talked about it before. Jason and Talay were on the show as well, talking about independent filmmaking. We brought up The FP. So then I, as I mentioned earlier, if you don't remember, Brandon DP'd with Rob Zombie for several films, and he was showing him the movie, The FP. And when my part came up, he kind of turned to Brandon and went, "Oh, I like that guy. That guy's cool." And I remember Brandon calling me from that second one, "Hey, Rob Zombie's a fan of yours and thinks you're cool." And I was like, "Great." So
you probably thought that would be the end of that, but just compliments enough.
Yeah.
That Rob Zombie likes.
3 weeks later, I get a call saying Rob Zombie wants to come do a part on Halloween too. Well, Brandon didn't even really know it until he saw the call sheet and went, "What? You called someone?" He goes, "Yeah, after seeing your movie, made me think of this part." So I went out there.
No way.
Yeah.
And so Brandon, you had no idea until you saw the call sheet.
Yeah.
No, I mean.
Well, pre-production like a week
before. Yeah, I did not know that Rob had reached out to Sean or his people to do it. I knew that he had seen the movie, but it was awesome. You came and you got rained out and got to spend like an extra week.
Rained out, because, so I got to stay for a few more extra days, and then we shot the thing. But Rob and I hung out, had a really cool time talking films all night, and then after that, he considered me a friend. So we went to his 50th birthday, and you and I went to the premiere of 31, and not 31, Lords of Salem, and a bunch of different other things, and. 10 years later, Rob texted me directly and said, "Do you want to do a part in my sequel for Devil's Rejects called Three from Hell?" And that was all literally from having fun in Maryland, 12 years before that. So, that's the weirdness of all of this stuff. And then I can go in, and Brandon and I had worked together. If you guys are watching me on TikTok, the Dorothys are blowing up. And that was shot by Brandon. Brandon and I went up in the FP one day and shot the Dorothy 50 Years Later shorts that are all over TikTok right now, and done a bunch of different things together. So we'll definitely have to bring you back.
Now here you are in my movie. It'll come out here.
As a director. So that's what we have to, part two for sure. But I think this is really helpful for actors to understand DPs and what they do. I mean, wouldn't you agree, Rox?
Yeah. I guess at some point we should have maybe said DP, director of photography.
So yeah, director of photography.
Maybe that helps too, in case you made it this far in this episode and still were unclear.
Yeah. But you will definitely have to bring you back, because then, as some people do, and it's not uncommon, that's what Jan de Bont did. That's what, who else? He used to work with the Coen brothers that did
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Barry Sonnenfeld. A lot of DPs go into directing, and so we'd love to talk to you about how that transitioned and stuff.
Sure.
So
absolutely.
Definitely have to have you back. So hope you guys learned a lot about this. It's always fun. Roxy, where can we find you?
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer. I stream live from my YouTube every single day, 1 p.m. Pacific time. And I've had some awesome guests on recently, so you're going to want to make sure you check that out, youtube.com/RoxyStryer. Thank you guys so much for helping me hit 20,000 subscribers. That was awesome.
Nice.
You guys really did help, so thank you so much for doing that. And I'll see you there tomorrow at 1.
There you go. And I'm everywhere at Sean Whalen Actor, except on TikTok. I'm at Sean Whalen 19. You can find me there. I'm having a lot of fun. And Brandon, do you have a social media presence anywhere that people could find you?
Barely. I have a Twitter account.
Yeah, that's okay. There's people who don't.
Yeah.
I tried to tag you on Twitter for this episode, but I used a hashtag for your name instead, because I couldn't figure out which one was you. There was an accountant. a cat person.
I think mine's actually Bitro, which is the character from the FP.
Yeah,
it's on there somewhere. I think it's B_TRO.
Yeah, there you go. We will definitely have you back for part two and what you learned from directors and how that helped you direct. So stay tuned for that. And as always, thank you for letting me be part of your journey.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.